95 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. The program you just heard, Labrish with Haptah Selassie, will be back next week at 2, following the work of the Midnight Ravers. It is 5 o'clock in New York City, and time for Back of the Book.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to All. What's the fastest moving physical object that humans have ever made? Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about a few things here, and you'll find out a little bit more about it, if you want to, by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. And when you get there, you will see a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top, it will say Latest Back of the Book Program Links. And look at that, and you'll see what we're going to talk about this morning. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 99th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. And the top story of this week for the whole wide world is, we have now soared all the way up to 120 followers. Wow, 120 followers on Twitter. That's just utterly amazing. And the world takes note of this because it's such a gigantic number. Meanwhile, I had problems on this on Twitter the other day. I'm looking at stuff as, you know, I subscribe to or follow 11 or 12 different entities, various people I know. I follow WBAI and stuff like that. And that's what I get tweets from. All of a sudden, I am getting tweets, and it says 13 new tweets. That's a lot for me. Oh, okay, what's this? And it's a whole bunch of all different things and stuff, and what is this? And every 5 or 10 seconds, another 13 tweets are coming. And I'm looking at it, and it's not from various entities I'm following. And it keeps up, and I'm getting just loads and loads of these things. And I'm like, what is this? And so I start looking around, and I went into Twitter, and I started clicking on something where they say, oh, topics, what would you like to see? And they have everything checked. I'd never even seen this damn thing before. I think what happened is somebody at Twitter threw a switch, and all of a sudden I was getting everything. So I had to go down this thing, and there were well over 100 categories that I had to click on to say, I don't want to see it. And so I look, and you have 13 new tweets. Oh, what? It keeps on doing this. It doesn't stop. And so what I did was I noticed that it had an X on these tweets that were coming in. And I said, maybe I should just click on the X, because I figure what it will do is it will get rid of that particular tweet and I won't have to see it. But it's probably going to just let all the others cascade in. Well, it didn't turn out that way. What happens was when you click on it, it says, okay, we won't show you this topic anymore. And I said, aha. So I started clicking on each of these annoying tweets that had come in from over the transom. And I think I've got things down and back to normal. I wrote on Twitter, I said to everybody who to our 119 followers then, as opposed to the 120 we have now, I said, anybody know anything about this? Nobody replied, so I guess it isn't anything anybody is knowledgeable about. Maybe it just happened to me. I suppose maybe it's possible I clicked one thing and all of this happened. That would be bizarre if you accidentally click one thing and you get all of this bombardment happening. Anyway, I think I fixed it right now.
So you mean, in order to make this stop, it was a two-step process?
I don't know if it was supposed to be a two-step process, but it's the way it worked out for me. I looked at my profile, and I started clicking well over 100. I didn't count them. Well over 100 categories that I did not want to see. And then I had to start clicking on many, many different individual tweets I was getting on topics. And both of those seem to have worked together, I guess. So, yeah, it's bizarre, and that's the kind of thing that can happen to you on social media, is the platform can bleep you around. The next meeting of the WBAI local station board will be held on Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022, but it will be an executive session. The next regular local station board meeting will be on Wednesday, August 10th at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. We had a meeting of the local station board this past Wednesday, and some local station board members wanted to read a letter that they'd written about some things at WBAI, and they got their letter reading put on the agenda as an agenda item. But when we got to that agenda item, some other members objected to the letter being read. I didn't sign the letter, although I agree with the main thrust of it, that the bylaws were violated. Yeah, some people just add things onto statements which make them less useful. Sometimes brevity and getting right to the point is useful. Unlike on radio, where shooting your mouth off all over the place is something that's, I guess, valued, at least by some people, I guess. I don't know. So the objection that some people had was that the letter was about confidential matters, but the letter had been online, including on the local station board's public mailing list for a while. Some people were pressuring the chair, and the chair ruled the agenda item out of order. Of course, under Robert's Rules of Order, you can appeal a ruling of a chair, and this was done. And the chair's ruling was appealed, and after a lot of talk, after a bit, by a vote of 12-7 with one abstention, the chair was overruled. However, by then it was time for public comment, which we have at a set time. So it looked like it had been a Pyrrhic victory. But then, during public comment, one person making a public comment read some of the letter. Their time ran out. And then another caller picked up from there, and a third finished reading the letter aloud. And, oh, that was amusing. That I thought that was okay, the way that worked out there. So You know, come on. You don't like what some people are saying. You know, you disagree and all of that stuff. You don't say, oh, you can't do that. Especially when you say it's confidential and secret when it's been plastered all over the internet by that time. Oh, gosh. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 561,030,816 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,367,272. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 89,394,580, and the death toll in America was 1,023,666. So 3,137 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. That's significantly higher than the previous weekly average. The pandemic is not over, even though a lot of people are behaving as if it were. In fact, a lot of people are just not bothering to get vaccinated or wear masks. Some of them, you know, a lot of these people are doing that from the first place. They never believed there was one, a pandemic, and they've been saying it doesn't exist, and some of them have been saying that on their deathbed as it's killed them. Some attribute this thing of making believe that it's all over and you don't have to bother with a mask or anything to what's being called, quote, pandemic burnout, unquote. Well, humans are just not disciplined creatures. That's a part of it. And people get tired and they get lazy and they say, oh, I've done this enough. We can just go on as if it weren't still happening. But of course, it's still happening. So when you do that, what happens? Well, you get yourself some variants, and it keeps going, and it keeps doing things. Hospital admissions and deaths from COVID-19 have been higher in recent weeks, so we're not just dealing with a heat wave, we're dealing with another wave of this virus. Earlier this week, the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, said that the highly transmissible BA5 subvariant now makes up about 65% of COVID-19 cases, and the BA5 and BA4 subvariants together make up about 80% of the cases. A variant called BA2.75 is responsible for a much smaller number, but that could change, apparently. Yeah, all of these things are mixing up in people as people get sick, and every single person who gets COVID-19 or the SARS-CoV-2 virus in their body, they're mixing it up, and there's the potential for more mutations. In fact, more mutations do happen, just that most of the mutations are no damn good and they fail. But you do that trillions of times and you're going to get yourself some viable variations that come out and hurt everybody. It's sort of like the old, if you had enough chimpanzees and enough typewriters, they would write out Shakespeare's plays. Well, not too different from this, because that's the way viruses work, is they put parts in a human cell, and the cell starts making more virus parts here and there, and then those parts just kind of auto-assemble, and you see what you get. It isn't like assembling a car at a plant where it goes down the runway there, and the assembly line keeps doing things in a regular way, and out rolls a car at the very end of it. It's more like a tornado hits a junkyard and swirls things around and then drops it. What is it dropping off, you know? Could it be a car? Well, it might be something that could roll around a bit. This is sort of like the way viruses work. Currently, about 40,000 Americans are now hospitalized with COVID-19. When you get hospitalized, it's not a joke. It's serious stuff, and it's life-threatening if you're hospitalized. Mayor Adams said of COVID-19, quote, "We're not out of the woods. It's still here," unquote. The test positivity rate in the five boroughs of New York was above 15% this past week, according to city figures. I think that that should put the kibosh on the idea that was going around that Mayor Adams was going to tell those people who got fired from their city jobs for not getting vaccinated last year that they could come back. I think this is, you know, enough to say, hey, you didn't do it. It's still here. Let's not make believe that it's over. In New York City, more than 60% of adults have not received a booster shot, including about 40% of the population over the age of 65, according to city data. If you're over 65 and you're not getting boosted, you're really risking things. Get boosted, for Christ's sakes. If you're not vaccinated, I would say getting vaccinated is the smart idea here, kiddies. Ugh. The White House COVID-19 coordinator, Dr. Ashish Jha, said, quote, "For people who are 50 years of age or older, my message is simple. If you have not gotten a vaccine shot in the year 2022, if you have not gotten one this year, please go get another vaccine shot. It could save your life," unquote. And here's a statistic I found interesting. Fully vaccinated Americans over 50, that means they got two shots, the first two shots, the Americans over 50 who have received one booster shot in addition to the other two are at four times the risk of dying of COVID-19 as twice boosted members of that age group, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. I'm glad that Pickles of the North and I have gotten both our booster shots. We've gotten all four shots. So that means we're in the category of being significantly less likely to die of this thing if it should somehow get into us. I mean, breakthrough cases are sort of getting common at this point because you've got these adapting viruses that have gone and changed so that they are just ultra infectious. We keep talking about how much more infectious than the previous one, the latest one is. They're just unbelievably infectious. So, yeah, if you're over 50 or over 65, something like that, whatever your age, you know, if you're 20 and you've had two shots, you're not protected. If you've had two shots and one booster, you're not that well protected. You need to get a second booster.
And if you've had COVID, you are not protected.
Yeah, because the parts of the virus that your immune system had gotten used to and was fighting, they've changed. So your immune system isn't going to see it very well anymore. Having had it, you can get it again. This is not unusual of viruses, and COVID-19 is one of those. Of course, by the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher. This was all mostly preventable. And the January 6th committee hearings continue, and oh, the revelations that are coming out. We're hearing that a Washington, D.C. cop who gave his own account to the congressional committee investigating the January 6, 2021 attack has reportedly confirmed former White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson's story that Trump got into a physical altercation with Secret Service agents on January 6th as he tried to force them to drive him to the Capitol to lead his supporters in that violent insurrection. And Ms. Hutchinson gave her testimony on June 28th, and the cop has been, deposed this past week. So, oh boy, that was interesting, and I guess we're going to hear that pretty soon. And former White House counsel Pat Cipollone did not contradict Ms. Hutchinson either. Remember when right after Ms. Hutchinson's testimony, we heard that people in the Secret Service were clamoring about this, and they said they were prepared to deny her account under oath. Do you remember we heard about all of that? No one from the Secret Service has stepped up to do that yet. Now, however, in the past couple of days, we are hearing that the Secret Service accidentally deleted text messages from January 5th and 6th after a Department of Homeland Security watchdog asked it to preserve all records. Ooh, suspicious. The Secret Service claimed it unintentionally deleted the messages as part of a routine, quote, device replacement exercise, unquote. Doing that after being asked to preserve those records is just a bit suspicious. What was on those phones might well have told exactly what happened in that limo on January 6th. Might have Secret Service people relating exactly what happened, and gee, I bet you it would agree with what Ms. Hutchinson told the committee. But I guess we can't find it out now because they threw the phones away. They probably did some, you know, special thing of turning the phones into mulch or whatever. Well, actually, you just get the SIM card inside it. That's where everything is. And they just probably take those out and you burn them. You put them over a hot flame and it destroys everything in there. Yeah, what happened in that limo on January 6th? And what happened in the day before it all happened? Perhaps plotting? Also, the messages back and forth might relate to Mike Pence's concern about being driven away from the Capitol against his will on January 6th. And that documentary film guy was down in the basement hiding with Pence from the Trump supporters who were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence," and setting up a gallows on the Capitol steps. And that videographer was down there with him. And Pence is telling the head of the Secret Service, "You know, I trust you, but I don't want to get in that car and suddenly find myself driven out of the Capitol. I want to stay here." And so he didn't get in. It seems a little strange that he would say that. You know, and I wonder if getting the messages back and forth among the Secret Service might be revelatory for why he said that. Why would he be suspicious of getting in a car? Why would he decide he's going to stand up for, what, an hour, hour and a half down there instead of just taking a seat for a while? Hey, it's a questionable thing there, and I wonder if something might have been afoot that he got wind of and the January 6th committee has not heard about yet. Anyway, so it's possible the Secret Service was going to drive him away. That's a possibility. It's possible that at least some in the Secret Service had plotted to drive Pence away so that the ritual counting of the Electoral College ballots could not continue. I wonder if some elements of the Secret Service were a part of the plot to keep Trump on as president after he lost the 2020 election. This is, you know, this is speculation, but look at these things that are kind of all happening here. The Secret Service, their text messages back and forth, they're gone after they were asked to be preserved. See, if they were just gone, you say, oh, that just happens. But when they're gone after the request has been made that they be preserved, yeah, that's real damn funny. And we've got the statement by Pence. So we don't, you know, when we saw it at first, it seemed a little bit strange that he would say that to the Secret Service guys, because the president and vice president generally get fairly close to those people. And to make a statement of mistrust of that sort by Pence was very odd. It would be much less odd if Pence had started hearing about chatter back and forth among various Secret Service people that, hey, if we drive Pence out, that stops the whole thing. And we can make, you know, Trump can then make a claim that the ritual counting was never done properly. They left because you're not supposed to leave during that. So, yeah, this is very serious stuff. And the Manchurian president may have some other interesting things that are going on around him.
They really need to clean house over at the Secret Service. This cannot stand.
Yeah, I think a bunch of people in the Secret Service, one, probably need to go find other employment, and two, at least some may need prosecution, especially when you're told preserve the record, and then you do exactly the opposite. You destroy it all. So there's that. I wonder also if anybody still has any of that. Is it possible that stuff went through a server that has retained the information? Or did that get erased too? So, yeah, it's a question. On chat and on text messages and all of that, it looks like it's just, hey, me and you talking. It's not. There's a server involved. And some servers are made to just wipe everything right away. Some servers are making a long list of everything that's passed through them. I don't know which kind they had for the Secret Service and their phones, but, gee, that's kind of an interesting idea right there.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
And the New Generation Space Telescope is operational. Yes, it's named after a homophobe, and I'm not going to say his name. It was originally called the Next Generation Space Telescope. And, yeah, we're going to call it that because we don't want to mention a homophobe's name. And so it's operational now. It's a million miles from the Earth, and it's at the L2 point. L2, the L stands for Lagrange, who was a French mathematician from hundreds of years ago, and he did his calculations, and he looked at what Newton's theory of universal gravitation said, and he did some calculations on that, and he found, hey, you know what? Things balance out. And so L2 is Lagrange point 2, but they just call it L2. And there are a bunch of them, and there's one in front of the Earth in its orbit. There's one in back of the Earth in its orbit. There's one between the Earth and the Sun. There's the L2, which is in back of the Earth-Moon system. And, oh, it's complicated stuff. This is the kind of thing I'm told that when they get to this, engineering and mathematics students just go blah, because this mathematics and all of that and figuring out these celestial mechanics, oh boy, it's difficult stuff. Anyway, this telescope, it's an infrared telescope, is giving good images, and they've got one that is supposed to be looking farther back in time than any other image has done. They took a deep field of a particular galaxy cluster, and I think the reason they did it was because of the gravitational lensing on that galaxy. And there's one or two foreground stars in there, and they can't help that. You can't say, would you move the star out of the way, please? We got to get a better picture than this. Now, a star gets in your way, the star gets in your way. And so they have these pictures, and yeah, some of the stuff is relatively close. It's in our galaxy, the individual stars, and they have heavy veining on them. That means there's like a white cross on them from all the light. And then the dimmer stuff is back there. But what happens is gravitational lensing occurs, and some light from very, very far in the past hits the cluster of galaxies, and it's bent. And so you see a number of these Einstein arcs. The original thing is an Einstein ring that would be formed, but the universe isn't that orderly, so it picks up chunks of it. And what happens is the light is bent around the galaxy, so it acts like a giant lens. Just as a lens, a glass lens, bends light, so does gravity. In fact, this is how Einstein's general theory of relativity was shown to be real, because people said, you know, wow, that's a lot of stuff that he did there, but it's so far out, it's so different. Can this possibly be true? Well, there was a prediction made that, hey, there's going to be a solar eclipse in 1919, and if Einstein is right, we have calculated, using his math, exactly where a star will seem to be. Now, we know where the star really would be without the sun there, but without the sun, it's in one place, but with the sun there, it's in a different place. And we generally can't see that because the sun's too bright, but during an eclipse, we got a chance. And in 1919, people went out with their telescopes and the scientists were watching. They took pictures. They made measurements. And that was the thing that really made Albert Einstein famous, was general relativity proven. And it gets proven very often these days. The entire GPS system is based on Albert Einstein. This galaxy cluster has such an enormous amount of gravity that it bends the light. And some of that light they can see and say this is from, you know, a very, very far time in the past. There's one particular instance of this where there are four arcs that you can see that show up around the galaxy cluster. And by examining them, scientists are able to tell that they're at different times, because some of them get to you sooner than others. So there are four of them, and they're in sequence. You're seeing basically the exact same thing, and then you see it again, and you see it again, and you see it again. And it's like months later, you see the same thing, you know, so it's very interesting that this can happen. Anyway, that's why they focused on that particular galaxy cluster, even though they've got what we could say, a contamination of the field by the local stars. So anyway, they looked at that. I mean, when the Hubble Deep Field was done, they didn't do it that way. They just focused on the most perfectly black part of the sky they could see, where nothing at all was visible. And then they came up with the Hubble Deep Field, which was heavily populated with galaxies. Nothing but galaxies. No local stars or anything like that. In any event, so it's giving this very good look back at things. And since it's infrared, they use both a mid-infrared camera and a near-infrared camera. Infrared light, it's light. You're used to seeing visible light. Infrared light is basically when you feel heat. If you turn on a radiator or you turn on something or other that's hot, you feel it. You can't see it, but you feel it. You're feeling infrared light hitting you. And the good part about infrared light for astronomy is infrared light doesn't get blocked by things all that easily. Gas and dust scatter visible light like crazy. Infrared light just marches right through the stuff for the most part. And infrared light is called infrared because it's below red on the spectrum. The spectrum goes from a lowest frequency of red light to the highest frequency of blue light. So you have infrared on one side, which you can't see. Then you've got ultraviolet light on the other side, which is a higher frequency than we can see. And there are some telescopes that use ultraviolet too. But the new generation space telescope uses two bands, two bands of two frequencies of infrared light. And so they can see things that you couldn't otherwise see. And they look at some things we're used to seeing that we have good Hubble images of, and they look different. And it gives them more information about it because we have the visible light and we have the infrared light, and you can learn about a whole bunch of this here stuff. And so they're looking way back in time with this. And I don't know. I've heard some of them say 13 billion years. I don't know that they're going actually that far back. I know you can't go back to the Big Bang. And the reason is that only about 380,000 years after the Big Bang happened did anything actually become visible, because, I mean, that's the absolute limit of how far back you can see, because that's where all the stuff let loose. In the early universe, it was so compact that any radiation would immediately hit a particle, and the particles were all colliding. It's just a huge ball of fire, basically, back then. And as the universe got bigger and bigger, it got to be less like that, and things could coalesce. And you could actually get a bit of clearing, which allowed, ironically, allowed things to be seen. And so from it's about 380,000 years after the Big Bang, that's what you could possibly see. You can't actually see that now. And that's another part of why they use infrared, because the universe is expanding. And it's expanding pretty rapidly, especially the farther out you go. And so the light gets stretched. And what was visible light becomes infrared light. And eventually it becomes microwaves and then radio waves, such as what you're hearing right now. And I don't know that any of it has gotten far enough away to be at that range yet. But infrared is where some of these things are in the early universe. So that's another aspect of this telescope, is that it can see things farther back because they are radiating in a part of the spectrum that it specializes in seeing. So they're looking for all sorts of things. They're looking for life, too. And I know that the New Generation Space Telescope was going to be looking at the atmospheres of exoplanets. Exoplanets are the planets that are not in the solar system. There are officially eight planets in the solar system. Of course, we could argue about the ninth one of Pluto. We could argue about that. But eight or nine in the solar system, over 5,000 exoplanets have been found. And this is with some pretty crude looking. There are just gazillions of planets out there. And so they're looking for life on these things. And I have heard, I'm not certain this is really official yet, I have heard that the telescope has found evidence of water in the atmosphere of one exoplanet. And that would be a very interesting thing to have happen. And they're going to be looking at all the individual exoplanets. They're going to be looking for things like oxygen and methane. And they're going to say, do we see signs of life, which would be these various gases and water vapor in the atmospheres of these planets? We know what a planet that has life on it, we know what its atmosphere looks like because we look at our own atmosphere. We've looked at our atmosphere from outer space, so we know exactly what the Earth's atmosphere looks like. And if you see an atmosphere just like that, you could say, the odds are real damn high there's life on that planet. There's all of this stuff going on, and it's going to be very exciting. And the telescope has had some micrometeoroid damage. Yes, the next generation telescope has gotten hit by some micrometeoroids. It's stuff that's extremely tiny, and space is full of that. And one in particular has made a mark on one of the mirrors. They've been hit by a total of about 11, last I heard, but one of them was quite a hit. And the difference is that some of this stuff is traveling at an enormous velocity, so when it hits, it really matters. So, yeah, it's a very big telescope, and over time, it's going to be eroded out there. But it's not the only spacecraft that humans have out there that is doing stuff. Now we're going to answer the question that we asked at the start of this radio program. Yes, we've had space probes before, and there are a couple of them that are quite superlative at this time. And I'm talking about the Voyagers. Yes, to be seen in the first Star Trek movie where they call it V'ger. The space aliens call it V'ger. And they're talking about the Voyager that goes out there. And it's the one that they're the two that have those Carl Sagan-inspired records on them, which some people were outraged that was going to happen, and it's a waste of money, but they're out there, and I'm glad of it. Anyway, the Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 were launched in reverse order. That's the way life goes sometimes. Voyager 2 was launched on August 20th, 1977, and Voyager 1 was launched after it on September 5th, 1977. And their jobs were mostly to look at the outer planets. And they looked at Jupiter and Saturn. And then after Saturn, Voyager 1 in 1980 gets boosted by Saturn out of the solar system. And it goes flying off. Voyager 2 went on to look at Uranus and Neptune after that. And then after Neptune, it too got catapulted out of the solar system. And they did this on purpose because they said, hey, it's still working. Let's see if there's anything out there. And so they did that. And in fact, Voyager 1 captured the famous pale blue dot photograph on Valentine's Day, 1990. They're still going out there, and it's amazing stuff. Of course, things age. Nothing lasts forever. And this year, NASA plans to begin turning off some of the Voyager's systems. They're going to get the remaining energy stores to extend their unprecedented journey to about the year 2030. The Voyagers are amazing, partly because they have 69 kilobytes of memory. You have toys with so much more. Yourself, don't even compare your cell phone with this thing. 69 kilobytes of memory in the Voyagers because they're from the 70s. These things are still going and they're making discoveries. The Voyagers together took more than 33,000 photographs of Jupiter and its satellites. And I'm reading from the July 2022 Scientific American talking about all of this, and they're making all sorts of discoveries, for instance, what the heliosphere is, where the influence of the sun is. In a way, they are in interstellar space. They're the first human things to hit interstellar space, and they also are the things that discovered that Europa was covered with the cracked icy crust, which now may be more than 60 miles thick and could possibly have life in an ocean underneath all of that. Right now, both Voyagers are so far from Earth that a one-way radio signal traveling at the speed of light takes almost 22 hours to reach Voyager 1 and just over 18 hours to catch Voyager 2. Every day, they move away from the Earth by another 3 to 4 light seconds. It's the fastest thing humans have ever done. It may at some point see the interior of the Oort cloud, but it will probably both be dead by then because the Voyagers aren't going to reach the near edge of the Oort cloud for another 300 years. The Oort cloud is a huge bunch of ice and dirt that is spherical around the solar system. They've discovered a lot about the heliosphere, which they've gotten beyond now. And there was not a lot known about the heliosphere before the voyages hit it. The heliosphere is important because it deflects most low-energy cosmic rays before they hit the inner solar system. It shields the planet Earth from about 75% of the cosmic rays out there, which is a good idea because they can hurt you. Stamatios Krimigis, who designed the low-energy charged particle detector system, and he's now emeritus head of the Space Department at Johns Hopkins, says the amount of software on these instruments is slim to none. He says, on the whole, I think the mission lasted so long because almost everything was hardwired. Today's engineers don't know how to do this. I don't know if it's even possible to build such a simple spacecraft now. Voyager is the last of its kind, unquote. Voyager 2 has 5 remaining functioning instruments, and Voyager 1 has 4. The power output decreases by about 4 watts a year, and it wasn't huge to begin with. And 2 years ago, the mission's engineers turned off the heater for the cosmic ray detector, and that had been crucial in determining the heliosphere transit. And so they didn't need it anymore since they were past the heliosphere. And everybody expected the instrument to die. And one guy says the temperature dropped like 60 to 70 degrees Celsius, well outside any tested operating limits. And the instrument kept working. It was incredible. And he says, how much longer they might last just depends on the power. That's the limiting point. In another 16,700 years, mark that on your calendar, Voyager 1 will pass our nearest neighboring star, Proxima Centauri. 3,600 years later, Voyager 2 will pass it. There's a message on the V'gers from President Jimmy Carter, who was president when they launched them. And it says, we cast this message into the cosmos. We hope someday, having solved the problems we face, to join a community of galactic civilizations. This record represents our hope and our determination and our goodwill in a vast and awesome universe. Unquote. Different world in those days. Oh, we got a pitch. We got a pitch. I know. There's almost no time. Oh, they're going to shoot us. Okay. Yes, we've talked about this stuff, and we're asking you to send some money to BAI to pledge money. Call 1-212-209-2950. Help us to pay the tower fund. We have the tower that it's where our transmitter and antenna are on top of 4 Times Square, and we got to pay the rent. It's a lot of rent. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number and say you wanna pledge some amount of money to BAI to help with the tower fund, and it can be whatever amount you want. If it's $25 or more, you become a member and you get to vote. 1-212-209-2950. And you know, we talk about various things. This time we squeezed in a lot of science stuff, and we squeezed out a lot of other things, including enough time to really pitch. But, you know, you've got the V'gers out there traveling, and, oh, here they come now. Yes, the V'gers, they're like little trains going out into the outer edges of the solar system. And we've talked about that, and they're going through it all. Oh, we talk about things other people don't talk about. Who else talks about when you can see light from the beginning of the universe? You know, we've got people on TV and the mainstream media who blow these topics all the time. They can't figure out, you know, they don't know what the solstice is. Some of them think the solstice means the Earth is closest to the sun, which is stupid. We know better, and we tell you better. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number now. We need you to call them. The call center will pick up. Tell them you want to make a donation to the Tower Fund in the name of Back of the Book. That way, we hope we'll get credit for it. 1-212-209-2950. Management thinks we have no listeners at all. We know we've got some of you because some of you write to us. 1-212-209-2950. The way to show management we have listeners is to raise money. is for you to call in and say you want to donate to the Tower Fund and give some amount of money for it. 1-212-209-2950. We need to hear from some folks. We need to hear from some number of folks right now. That's 1-212-209-2950. We cover the politics stuff. We cover various scientific things. I consider the COVID pandemic to be related to science. And we also cover things like the next generation or the new generation, whatever the hell it's called, space telescope. And, you know, we also make a point that it's named after a homophobe. And we talk about it and what's going on with it. And we pay attention to these things. And we pay attention to the Voyagers. And we talk about them. And they're out there. They're the fastest things humans have ever made. And who else talks about that? Well, if you appreciate that, we really wish you would call 1-212-209-2950 and pledge some amount of money. And you can do that right now. If you want to become a BAI buddy, you can still do that by calling the same number, 1-212-209-2950. Say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And then you tell them how much you want to donate every month. BAI Buddy is our monthly membership thing. And it's a sustaining membership. And you tell them if you want to donate $5, $10, or more than that. And on every month, you tell them what day of the month you want your credit card or debit card charged. And they will do it. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number. Give us a call at that number now. And you could also do a lump sum. You want to donate some amount of money one time. Do that for the Tower Fund. The Tower Fund needs your dough. And that way we will not get evicted. Well, what will happen is they'll shut us down. They won't go to eviction. That's costly and expensive. Shutting us down is flip a switch. 1-212-209-2950. Please, we need you to call us up and pledge some amount of money. WBAI needs to make some dough here. 1-212-209-2950. That's a number to call. And if you don't call that number and you find out we're just permanently not here someday, that's because management thinks there are no listeners here and they can't raise money. Call up 1-212-209-2950 and say, yeah, we listen and we donate money. That's what you'll be doing. You'll be telling management that you're donating money and we have listeners. And with that, we can stay on the air. 1-212-209-2950. You hear political programming on this program and you hear science programming on this program. And we talk about things like 69 kilobytes of memory for a space mission. Good grief. 1-212-209-2950. Finding an example of something that has that small an amount of memory, I couldn't find anything in the modern world. 1-212-209-2950. Please give us a call at that number now. And thank you if you have donated. We're out of time. That's it for Back of the Book this week. Coming up next is
Arts Express with Prairie Miller.
We hope we'll be back next week. And look out the window, enjoy the heat wave we're about to have. And above all, remember what that looking for the Oort cloud dormouse said.
Extinction Diaries. Over 100 years ago on the tiny island off Africa called Madagascar, the Voltkaus chameleon turned on its camouflage and vanished. The little reptile was thought to be extinct until 2020 when scientists discovered several individuals on the northwest side of the island where massive deforestation is taking place. For the first time, a female has been documented. She was observed displaying vividly colorful patterns around males or when undergoing stress. But more fascinating is the Voltkaus may only live a few short months. During the island's rainy season, the reptiles hatch from eggs and then grow to maturity, mate, and die. It doesn't appear they ever see their offspring. The Voltkaus expedition was also looking for two other long-lost magicians of the forest, the Toothleafed and the Grandidery Chameleon. Scientists will keep looking, but for now, the fate of most Madagascar species completely depend on the unlikely prospect that the forest destruction ends immediately. My name is Arne Oliveira, and this is a Small World Radio production.
Life goes on. Malin, I know it hurts, but it'll get better. Yeah. And if you feel like taking a whack at something, come on over and hit on me. I won't break.
I may take you up on that.
This week on WBAI Playhouse, Steel Magnolias by Robert Harling, a story about fortitude and the power of friendship withstanding the test of time.
Oh, you all have no idea how wonderful you are.
Of course we do.
Oh, stupid radio. There. That's better.
Steel Magnolias by Robert Harling on listener-sponsored WBAI, the WBAI Playhouse, Saturday, 8 p.m.
Funny, this radio hasn't been working very well the past 2 days.
Peter, where do you live?
I'm glad you asked me.
It's a secret place. Please tell me.
All right, I tell you.
All Mixed Up with Peter Beauchamp.
When?
Saturday afternoons at 6 here on WBAI.
That should be time for our favorite program.
Yes, just about time.
I should have been back here a long time ago.
What would you do if I went off the air?
We kill ourselves!
The WBAI CAB, our Community Advisory Board, is tasked with advising the local station board on WBAI station policies and programming. They are holding their next meeting on Sunday, July 24th at 1 p.m., and all listeners are welcome to attend. The call-in number is 623-600-3766. 623-600-3766. The meeting ID number is 963-003. Again, the next CAB meeting is Sunday, July 24th at 1 p.m. The call-in number is 623-600-3766. The meeting ID number is 963-003. More information on how to attend is on our website, WBAI.org, under meetings. And all listeners are very welcome to join the meeting.
He's cool. He's exciting.
This dude is bad.
He's sexy. Okay, maybe not. He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
He's Tony Ryan. On WBAI New York 99.5 FM. He's got both.
Frank Hibbs with the sound of the trumpet.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
He's got classic soul. He's okay. I can't think of anything else.
I'm Tony Ryan. Tune in Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Soul Central.